lineouts, racks.
Pulls, engage!
What an amazing try!
Tries and tackles, dissected by South Africa's top rugby minds.
That is world class!
This is To The Last Drop, your weekly in-depth rugby podcast with Liam Delcombe and Brendan Nell.
Brendan, welcome. This is a biggish week for South African rugby. There's a rugby championship decider that's going to take place. We last week didn't necessarily anticipate that it's going to go into this week as a decider. There was a lot of hope that the Springboks would get the job done in Argentina, but it's actually turned out quite nicely because there is a lot on the line this weekend. Still a bit of a long shot for Argentina to come to the low veld and produce what would be a stunning result if they were able to not just win, but somehow manufacture a way to win the championship. There's a lot to look forward to this week.
Definitely. I mean, look, the permutations are probably a bit against them. They have to deny the Springboks a bonus point. They have to get a bonus point themselves, which means scoring three more tries than the box. So they have to have quite an emphatic win to do that against a Springbok team that hasn't had a loss like that really under Rossie Erasmus ever. If I remember right, I can't think of one off the top of my head. You'd have to go to the days before Rossie was there. They certainly are capable of it. They showed it against Australia in that second game, but that game was in Argentina. And yeah, so it's lovely being in Nelspruit. There's definitely a vibe here, 42,000 people, sold out stadium. And you certainly get that sort of old school, sort of small town vibe where the test sort of takes over the entire week. That's all everybody's talking about. There was hundreds of people at the airport the other night when the box arrived. You can see it's really gripped this town, and it's lovely to see again. And expecting a great game on Saturday, and I expect the box to wrap up the championship.
Yeah, if it's anything like the week and the match the box played the last time they played in Nelspruit against the All Blacks, then it's going to be stunning because that was one hell of an occasion. And also the fact that the Argentina and the Springboks were able to leave Santiago and fly straight to Nelspruit, a massive help for both sides on a chartered flight, because it just saves so much time and energy to start the next week of preparation and get there as soon as they could.
Yeah, interesting though. I mean, I don't think people accept the understand that obviously it's logistically it's great that they do that, because they traveled in a chartered, I think it was Ethiopian Airlines plane that sort of picked them up, and they both teams traveled in the same.
Good homework there, Brendan. Well done.
Yeah, no, I did actually have a chat with some of the guys there at the hotel, and they told me, and it was great because the box and Argentina, it was a big plane. They didn't tell me what plane it was, but they said that each team basically had lie three seats per player, so they could almost lie flat. Now, that's a different thing if you Jaden Hendricks and if you even Itzabeth, obviously, but it's nice to see that they sort of kept that in mind and try to give both teams the same. But the one thing it does do, it negates any sort of little advantage that the box have in terms of playing at home, coming home before them, or waiting for a team in South Africa like they do in the July tests, because both teams experience the same sort of jet lag, same time zones, all those sort of things. So all those things are equal. So in that respect, it probably helps Argentina a little bit. But I think at the end of the day, it doesn't really matter. The Saturday is going to be no place to hide. And interesting one, I must admit, I mean, the talking point there, I mean, we must mention it, is one, it feels like we're back in the World Cup again. One Marnie Lebok.
Yeah, we've been here before, haven't we? I've kind of looked it up. While he has had test matches where he's had iffy and sometimes poor kicking performances, and the one that jumps out is the one against Ireland in the pool stages of the World Cup in Paris last year, we haven't really had a situation where we had on Saturday where a kick that determines the game right at the death goes wide and it costs the box a victory. It doesn't necessarily condemn them to defeat. You know what I mean by that? They didn't win it for the box and he didn't lose it for them, basically. That's what I'm trying to say. But that was the first time where the kick right at the end drifts wide and it obviously doesn't bring victory. Clearly, goal kicking and pressure situations like that is a problem. But then you have to weigh it up against the other virtues that he brings to the table for the boxers at fly-off. Because, I mean, there are any number of other things that he does well. And in particular, if you think of the way they play now, not just under Tony Brown, but even last year, the World Cup and before World Cup, where they clearly developed an arm and a leg on attack, and he was very much instrumental in providing them that.
Yeah, and they've backed him again to do that this week. Now, yeah, Nelspruit, and I think it's the right call. We don't have flowers growing on trees. There's those that are coming through are very inexperienced at test level at the moment. So you don't just throw players away, first of all. I think with that game, I thought the first thing that popped in my mind was, I think from way back then, I don't know if you remember 2004 when Ireland beat South Africa at Lansdowne Road, that's the stage, the infamous Paul Honus test.
Paul Honus.
We told John Smith to go talk to his players and then allowed Ronan O'Gara to tap and score. And I still remember at one stage there, after the game, I was arguing with one of the Irish journos about it. And his answer to me was, well, mate, that happened in the 16th minute. You had 64 minutes to rectify it, and you didn't. Mm. And I think it's the same sort of principle applies, different situations, obviously, but we focus on 1 minute at the end of the game. But Rusty's right. They probably shouldn't have been in that situation. They missed 4 or 5 cross-scoring opportunities. They weren't at their best on attack. They slipped a lot of tackles on defense. There's a lot for them to work on this week, which I'm sure the Bok coaches have hammered down on them as well. And, they know this Bok team with their backs against the wall normally comes up with a good. So that's why I'm not too worried. And I think it's going to be more celebration this weekend than we think.
Yeah, and the other point to make there, apart from defense, they could have been more clinical with the ball. If you have that amount of scrum dominance, you really should be doing more on the scoreboard, because you've got a great platform to kick it into the corner to Maul, to apply the squeeze and wear the other team down, and the Bucks just didn't do that.
Yeah, and you add to that, I just saw a stat this morning, they've got the highest Maul success rate, 94% in the competition. When you've got a Maul success rate like that, and you've got a scrum that's winning penalties almost every scrum, and you don't take that dominance in and score points out of it, then you've got to look at yourself. And I think that's what they've done this week. All the players, I mean, Jaden spoke about it, Don Himmon spoke about it earlier this week as well. Rossi and Bongi both alluded to it and how it was hammered down, the opportunities they missed. And so that's why I think it's going to be a much more disciplined, much more focused performance from the Box. But it will be the same from Argentina, so it'll be fascinating to watch. Mm.
You mentioned the word celebration earlier. Ibn Etzebet breaking the record officially this week. Obviously a wonderful servant of South African rugby, a tower of strength, enforcer. You can use all these wonderful words to describe him. A great inning so far.
Well, yeah, and I think the thing for me about Ibn is just, we deal with the teams quite often. We see them in the hotels. You get all sorts of characters in the team. You get the guys who are extroverts. You get the guys who are introverts. And the guys who don't like media and the guys who love the media. But Eben's always been the same his whole career. I've got along very well with him. He doesn't suffer fools. I'll put it that way. But if you fare towards him and you don't try and be sensationalist, he's always been exceptionally good with us as media. And I've really enjoyed covering him, and I wish him all the best this weekend.
Mm. Yeah, I had a similar experience during the World Cup last year where you don't have many. It wasn't a one-on-one. There were two journalists, myself and another Sunday journalist. And he gave us a wonderful interview, a big difference from if somebody sits top table with like 15 microphones in front of them. Because you ask not different questions, but I mean, you almost have a conversation as opposed to having an interrogation.
Yeah, I think what happens is his persona on the field influences the way people ask questions of him in interviews. Mm. And especially when you're in a setting where there's 20-odd journalists from different backgrounds in a room. I mean, we saw it, I remember in 2015, the only time I've ever seen him get upset in a press conference, there was one journalist who tried to make a joke and told him that he looked like Borat. And what did he? And Eben didn't take it very lightly. But that you can sort of understand because... Yeah, you're a professional rugby player. You're talking about game, the serious stuff, and especially 2015, where they'd gone through, they'd lost against Japan. There was there was a different mindset in that whole team, almost like a siege mentality, and then have to deal with sort of that sort of stuff as well. But overall, Eben's been a gentleman. I know it's not a word people normally would use of Eben, but for me, he's been a gentleman. I've enjoyed covering him.
Many congratulations to him for breaking the record this weekend. And yeah, let's see how far or to what extent those celebrations get pushed deep into Saturday night and Sunday morning. The low veld is in a state of anticipation, as you can no doubt tell us already, Brendan, because you're there.
Yeah, no, it is. I mean, as I say, the whole town is talking about it. The Boks are having their first of the open training session today. I'm sure we're going to see while we record after we're recording this, but I'm sure we're going to see crowds there, cool kids. But the hotel's been a buzz. It really feels like an old school test week, which we don't always get because teams like to hide themselves away a bit from the public at times. But they're embracing it. They're loving it. The locals here are really enjoying it, and I think it's the first time that a test has been sold out for Argentina in South Africa, which is quite a feat. Does say a lot about how they've marketed it and how the Springboks are seen. And yeah, I mean it's going to be a great week. I think we should go straight into our. We've got quite a lengthy interview, so we must go straight into our interview. Yeah, sorry, a very disjointed segue going into that, but we're going to talk something different today because everybody's talking box. We've got the new CEO of the SA Rugby Legends Association, Marius Schoeman. Now, if you haven't heard of the Legends, they do some amazing work, and you're here in the interview. And he was also in charge of the Sevens program behind the scenes that was obviously so successful for so long. So have a listen. This is our chat with Marius. We're back. This week's guest is somebody we've known a long, long time. And since he was a player, now he's transformed into administrator. Well, a long time ago, transformed into administrator and been involved behind the scenes, not always on the forefront. Marius Schoeman, welcome. Yeah, maybe you can fill in the blanks in your bio because people are going to, I'm probably going to get it a bit wrong. You were the SA Rugby Sevens Academy manager the last couple of years. Am I right? Or is it high performance manager? Sorry.
Performance manager, other Brendan, Liam, thanks for having me. Yes, 23 years now involved in sevens, been like a lifetime. So played for 10 years and then started the academy with Neil Powell back in 2011. And yeah, I think very successful academy for 8, 9, 10 years. Unfortunately, with COVID, that was cut, but progressed into the high performance manager. So I'm in charge of all the national sevens teams at the moment. Yeah, so it was a good run, and then obviously the last year and a half struggled to have a result due to not having a feeder system, but I think we ended on a high with that bronze medal at the Olympics 2 months ago. So yeah, we on up again, trying to rebuild, getting some better younger players in for the future. But yeah, it's been a great journey, you know. And quite recently, maybe you've seen in the media 2 days ago, I've accepted the CEO position at SA Rugby Legends. So it's like an interim phase now, the next month, doing both. But yeah, great. It's just great to be involved in rugby.
I want to take you back. I mean, what got you into administration? I mean, when you were a player, and obviously you were a much decorated player, did you always harbor ambitions of one day when I stop playing, I want to get into admin and, but make things better?
Yeah, but it was never so the admin side to it. I'm not that highly educated, you know, so I know my strengths and weaknesses, but always wanted to be involved in sevens. I had a passion for it. I know Brendan back in the days, I think he's still writing. I was playing for the Pumas and the Lions, and I had a couple of opportunities to join Super Rugby franchises and always declined. And I just had a passion for sevens rugby. And then in my last year of playing, myself and Neil Powell had a sit down, and we were always thinking what's the needs for the Blitz box or for the SA Sevens? You know, we were always competing with unions for players, and it was always up, down, up, down, up, down. We had one good season in 2009, and then it dropped again. So we knew we needed a feeder system, and then we started the Sevens Academy. It was quite tough getting that through, but luckily back then we had the right support. And in 2011, I was just on injury and finished playing. They gave me, I remember well, they gave me six blank contracts. And I signed Cheslin and Quagga and Vanner and Justin Adult, to name a few. And from there, every year, the youngsters started joining the academy. You'll see Abellu, your Ruan Nel, Dylan Sage, Stedman, JC Pretorius. So all those names came through. And that's where the administrative role started. I was an academy coach and manager the first year, and then Neil came and he became the coach. I became the manager, and then he left again. Then I did both again, and we just grew that system. We took over the 18 system, and we won that gold medal at the Youth Commonwealth Games in Samoa back with Damon Willemse and them playing. I think 70% of that team became Springboks, you know. So it's just a passion, you know. I always tell the guys, never don't chase money, chase your passion, you know. Then you'll have a fulfilled life, you know. So I'm living that dream. It's just awesome. And now a new page.
Yeah, you can. I mean, Marius, I mean, you don't have to tell us that. I think we both chased our passion. We've all got friends who've been in much better careers. You're making a lot more money than journalists, but you have to be a passion if you're a rugby journalist. But it's probably the best type of journalism to be involved in. Just I want to go into the Sevens thing as well. Yeah, Sevens is often sort of. I think this lately, but in the beginning, especially when you took over, it was always sort of disparaged as the game, you know, this thing that you play almost like touch rugby at the end of a practice type thing, and people didn't see the value maybe in the seven system. I think that's been debunked over and over again. If you just look at the current Springbok team and guys like Cheslin Kwakha, Kurt Lee, all those guys who've come through the system, is there is now still. Do the unions see that sort of value in it, or do you behind the scenes still struggle to get those players like you did? I know not as much as in the past, but I think players see it more as a pathway now. But do the unions see it today?
We will always struggle. You know, it doesn't matter how well you get along with the unions, everyone's there for their own, you know. So we'll always compete with unions. I go to scouting at Craven Week and all the Balaclava and all those different school weeks, and there's always the unions and you pulling strings. I've really tried to better that relationship, and I think I've got it going now well now. Next year, I think we're five or six players on dual contracts, and that's what we always wanted. You know, I've got, I think, five schoolboys, and they're all in the SA schools or SAA side. So we've got quality youngsters now. In the past, you never got that top guys. Not that you need them. I believe you've got so much talent. And in the past, when it was such a struggle, I always focused on the third and fourth choice because no one looked at him. And that's where Quagga and those guys, they never played SA schools and they came through the ranks, you know. So you need to not just identify talent, but future talent. Or there's another word for it, but potential. You know, everyone's got potential, but if you went to a great college or a Paul Gym or a Paul Boys or Paul Roos, one of the biggest schools, those players are close to their ceiling, most of them, because they've got all the facilities in the world. They've gymmed from grade 9, 10, 11. Whereas a player from Brackenfell, like Cheslin, or someone like Werner Kok from Nelspruit, they didn't have that. And even your smaller schools, like Asako Makata from Stirling, they never had that. You know, so the potential for them to grow, in my head, just stats-wise, is more, and it showed. You keep them for 2 years, and they just go past some of their peers in the year group. Yeah, we always have to struggle. I just believe good relationships with unions. The unions does actually see the benefit. That's why it's a good thing that Neil is at the Sharks. He believes in that pathway, so we've got a good thing going there. There's a good relationship with the Bulls as well. We've got Cat Letabele coming in and out. Keonor Kia, they released him for us, so they actually see the benefit. I believe it can actually be better in the future. I still say all those best youngsters must come to Sevens for the first 2 years just to work on their skill set. And you're absolutely right. The whole thing in the past was touch rugby, but now if you look at defense in Sevens, there's no place to hide away. You know, and you can bring some of our national centers to a training now and put them in defense against our no names, and our guys will beat them because all of a sudden it's lateral defense. Guys in 15s shoot up, it's close space. If you miss, the next guy will tackle him. It's always double tackles, it's not often like singles, it's always a double or one and a half or three guys on a one guy or one player. In sevens, you've got your 10 meters and you need to defend that space. So some of the bigger boys can't do it. As soon as direction change, the weak shoulder and they're gone, you know. So I believe all those players should come to sevens. That's why Kurt Arends is defending so well. You know, you don't often see him miss a player because they're used to one-on-one tackling. And you're going to get exposed there. And I just believe it's a great development platform for especially defense, attack, and just identifying space.
Marius, is the value of sevens recognized globally? I know the profile of the game of sevens has seriously been upped with the Olympics and so on. There obviously still is a huge focus on the 15s World Cup. I mean, all the resources kind of go there, not all, but a lot goes there. Is sevens that gateway or that pathway to sort of popularizing the sport globally? Because it does obviously have those elements in which you can attract a lot more eyeballs than you would in the 15s.
I believe sevens will always be on the back burner, you know. So if you decide to play sevens, don't expect to come and get a massive salary or be on the front page every week. Unfortunately, that's what it's going to be. So, but it is fun. You know, it is fun to watch. We pull a lot of spectators. More spectators globally watch sevens, I think, than the 15s code, because we play in all these funny countries and in the East as well. It's massive in the East because they won't compete in 15s, but Japan, China, there's so many small India, they compete on sevens. They can actually compete, you know. So a lot of them put their resources towards sevens. I think it's definitely getting more popular. I saw now at the Olympics, I don't know if you've seen how many times they've sold out the stadium for the sevens. So you didn't buy one day ticket. They had sessions. So that 60,000 seats were sold out in the morning session. And then the stadium was closed for 3 hours where everyone were chucked out. And then they sold different tickets. And it was sold out again for the afternoon session. So I spoke to one of the organizers, and I think they sold out that stadium 4 times. And I think 4 or 5 times over and over, you know, for that for a 3 day event for the men. So it's definitely popular. We see Antoine Dupont playing. We would like to see our national players having opportunity as well, you know. So we are in negotiation there to see if we can get some of those pony players if they're not in the Rassie squad, just now and then. Because I think we need it for not just for marketing, but I think for rugby, it will be great to have a, let's call it a Chesson or a Jesse or Kurt Lee, Grant Williams. Grant Williams will be a world-class sevens player. So if we can just get them for 2 or 3 tournaments a year, just think of the message back home and the message out there that you'll send. And France did it well. They sent out the right message to say, listen, our sevens are also important to us. The Olympics are important. So, it's definitely popular globally. Yeah, I'm not sure how the funding, there'll always be competition, and it's always going to come down to global funding, et cetera. You know, so we saw this year that the season also changed. Usually we had 10, back in the days when I started, we had 12 tournaments here, and then it went to 10, and now they have this 8 tournament, the 7 tournaments, and the grand finale. So I think they're trying out new ideas to keep it fresh. But it's definitely, if you think of sevens, you think of dress up, you think of the South Stand in Hong Kong, and you think of a party atmosphere.
I was going to come in there, Maurice. Just you talk about the way the world rugby's seen the sevens as well. To me, they have tried things, but I mean, they've also messed up a lot of things. And I mean, you know, in this transition phase between SA Rugby and that, I don't know how much input you guys have at World Rugby when it comes to the Seven Series. But if we just look a couple of years back against the World Cup that we had in Cape Town, it was totally the opposite of any Sevens I've ever been to, and totally the opposite feeling in terms of playing at 10 o'clock at night. And it was serving a schedule, not the fans, if I can put it that way, was the simplest way of putting it. And there's now talk in the background of changing the series again and new venues and other places. And I'm just sort of wondering, It's fine when you SA rugby and you've got a sevens program, but I mean, for smaller a country like Kenya, for instance, who was once a sevens powerhouse, and they're struggling to get back up there through various things. But for smaller countries to get back into that through the challenger route, etc., all these changes don't help either. So I don't know how much influence or how much input do you guys get at World Rugby when it comes to these things?
Yeah, you know, it's actually very disappointing. You know, input wise, us on the ground, not a lot, unfortunately. You know, so we are not the decision makers. We try and give our input. The World Cup was a stuff up, you know, and you're absolutely right. That was planned for spectators that wanted to keep the host nation right at the end to keep people in the stadium. We had less than a 12-hour turnaround to play again. So, you know, Cape Town Stadium, once you've played, it takes another 2 hours to get to your hotel. Then you need to have a briefing. Then you need to shower. So 7 hours later, 6 hours later, you're back and strapping again. You know, so it didn't work for us. The planning-wise, it's tough for the smaller countries. It's tough for us as well. You know, but I think we can take it more in our stride because we're a full-time program, and we pride ourselves to adjustability. The smaller countries, it's always going to be tough for them, not knowing, you know, what's going to happen. Because you're right, they want to change it again, you know, and it needs to be sustainable. That's like any business; it needs to be sustainable. It is exciting to have a couple of less tournaments. It's not ideal traveling wise, because now you travel to, let's say, a once-off event in Australia. Flight times, you travel for 2 days, you come back and then you fly again. So the back-to-back for me is always great. And as a sevens player, you want to be tested. So sevens, you think fast, fun, but you also think athlete and performance. And that's usually the guys who can, it's like horses. They can keep on going. But now I want to see who's got the best horses. So playing in a once-off event, I like that to the back-to-back. You know, you need to push the players and the teams into the red. I know it's all about player safety, but this brings a different dimension of coaching in. It's not just coaching. You need to now manage your players. The substitutions becomes very, very important. And then your medical team recovery-wise. And it's just about managing your players, and then you actually test. It's more than just playing. It's a better test for me, and it's cost saving. It is. We don't know what's there. I think they've confirmed four venues so far for next season, four or five. They are trying new things, and I know America is hosting the 2028 Olympics, so there'll be input from that side as well to maybe have more events on that side. I'm not sure. There's more money that'll come in from that side, we need to keep it fresh, but we also need some sustainability, at least like for 5 years. It looked like they weren't sure what to do, you know, and it's, World Rugby is run by mostly people from the north, you know, so they've got their own ideas. We can just input at SA Rugby and hopefully they take it up further.
Marius, you probably need to move on to your new adventure. Can you tell us how that came about? Because it is a bit of a jump.
Yeah, look, I've been involved with the Legends from years ago. The first time was, I think, in 2013. Gavin Farigis, who's the president and the founder of the Legends, asked myself and Neil to take an under-12 team to Monaco, to the Princess Charlene a charity. They've got like a Saint Devoe tournament there in Monaco, under 12 team all over the world. So I think I took a team there for 3 years for the Legends, and here and there played a event. So as you guys said, on the background, you don't hear about all the things, but you are involved, and you know they do so many food drops as well. So the Legends, as I've mentioned, they're the biggest development platform for rugby in the Southern Hemisphere. People don't know that, you know. So the Ikawi week, that's why I'm in Joburg this week, at the opening, it's under 15, it's for your non-traditional playing rugby playing schools. So you all of a sudden you're giving opportunity to thousands of other kids that won't see a league or a Craven Week or a Villa Klaver or the big festivals because they're non-traditional playing schools. And I must say, there was some talent. So I was just looking here and there, watching some of the games. There's a lot of talent, you know, and I believe more and more players will come through that pathway. There were so many scouts. And I know that pick up some of those players and put them in your bigger rugby schools, and they're actually creating an opportunity for them. So it's a massive development pathway, and that is a rugby legends program. Same as VUCA, you know, they partnered with SA Rugby, but that's 100% legends. Jesse and Dale, they do amazing work down in Cape Town with this program. It hosted at Queen's High this week, and then you've got your events side of the Legends, where Legends is it's ex-players, it's also fun. They've got golf days, they've got long lunches, they've got dinners. You can book a legend for you can book John Smith for to come talk to your company. So we really want to try and still not only develop the youngsters but also help the ex-players and still get them involved in rugby, because you lose so much expertise. There's a lot of new projects that they do, food drops that people are not even aware of. The Legends spent millions and millions of, they've got, they partnered with Spar and with ShopRite Checkers, and they just buy parcels. And when there's floods, when it's in need, like COVID, we did so many, thousands and thousands of food drops at disadvantaged communities and people in need. So it's a non-profit, and it's just, yeah, it's really, it's a, again, as I say, development, it's from the one development opportunity, I went to the next. So Gavin offered me this role 3 years ago to take over from Stefan de Blanche, who was a great, great CEO for the Legends. And what a guy, you know. And then I declined because of the Sevens, and it was tough for me to decline back then. And then John Smith did it now interim for 2 years. But we must know John is a CEO of a different company as well, you know, so it's just no time. And when this restructuring happened at SA Rugby, you know, you came back for a bronze medal and your position is gone. And you have to apply for a different role. And I just didn't see myself in a different role. You know, I'm not a guy that can sit at a desk. And Gavin Farigis gave me a call, and him and John, and said, please, come join us. So I took the opportunity. It is a bit of a jump. It's a different role. You know, forget about the title. It's never about the title. It's what you can offer spearheading a great organization like the Celsius SA Legends. It's an honor. You know, there's massive names. I'll never be able to fill a John Smith. John Smith is the best captain that SA Rugby, except our CR, the current one. John Smith's out there. You know, what a man. So, but I'm going to try my best. Got great staff. We've got guys that's really passionate about the game. We're playing in a golf event this weekend in Winterton, in the Drakensberg, and we're doing a coaching clinic. And some of the crazy ex players are playing a game. How stupid! But I'm leaving my boots. But it's going to be great. You know, we've got some new events that will add to the legends. Some exciting stuff that's going to happen. And as you said, it's on the background, but we'll make sure in the next year it's more out there. We want people to actually know and see how they can get involved, because it might be people that want to get involved in this and making a difference in a youngster's life.
I was just going to jump in there when you said John's the best captain there at the Chiefs. Some people, you know those things, especially in social media, you say – so-and-so is a great captain, and then the whataboutisms come out. So it's good you corrected yourself quickly. There was, but as you know, I mean, I think the perception was for a long time out there that basically what the legends do, they do golf days, they do these long lunches, and every now and again get on the field in Bermuda or Bahamas or one of those crazy places where they play a tournament. And that's about it. And I think people don't see the work that gets done behind the scenes. You partly answered my question, because I was going to ask you, what's your plans? Because, you basically answered it already. So you're obviously looking very forward to this role, and it's a big one for you going forward.
Yeah, listen, for me, there's a lot of reasons. It excites me to be involved in rugby. It excites me to be part of development. But One of the biggest ones is I've got a very good relationship with Gavin. Gavin is one of also on the background. You would remember that the day when SA Rugby didn't have the cash flow issue, and they had Blue Label telecoms on the jerseys that test in the UK, and that's Gavin. He saw there was a need, and immediately he gave them a lot of money, to help the SA Rugby to stay on their feet. And on the background, he does so much. He's still sponsoring a lot of things that people don't know it. He doesn't want people to know it. But that's one reason I would not like to disappoint him. He's got a lot of faith in me. He's got a very good relationship. He's definitely my mentor. And this is his legacy project. So I want to take it to the next level. I've got great plans. But also there is other ex-players with great plans. I want to get them together. I want to get more guys involved. And it's never about me or the guy running it. It's about the team. I always say system first, so with the Sevens, and it's definitely going to be system first with the Legends as well. And to get back to I said John was one of the best captains. Yeah, is the best captain still. But I reckon you put two of them in government and they will run this country.
Just getting back to the legends and what you guys do. Obviously there's a couple of pillars that sort of prop up the whole thing. You've obviously got community upliftment as a big one. You've got SA Legends as a vehicle to look after older players, retired players, and help there where you can. And then you've also got grassroots rugby. What is your emphasis? I mean, why do you give these things equal sort of prominence in the way you go about your business?
No, it's actually funny you say that, and because this is my first week with the Legends, and I've actually got a meeting with some of them today, and with John. I'm working closely with John, John Smith, and the team, and I also wanted to know, what is number one, what is number two, but in my head, and I want to not rectify, want to put it out there that it is about grassroots development and development. I think a lot of people see the golf days, and that is secondary. It's very important still, but I want the development side to get more focus because it is our primary role is development. I just don't think people see it enough because it's not out there. Now, because it's a non-profit, we're not there to be on the front page of every newspaper. But I think it's time to actually educate the country and saying, shucks, this is actually what's going on, because most of that development, grassroots development, really, really important. We spoke about the non-traditional schools as well. We always see your bigger schools at your Balaclava or at your Craven Week or St. John's Festival. The same type of events is happening out there, but unfortunately, the media we'll go to the bigger ones first, but we want to make sure we get them the rightful acknowledgement, and that'll change in the next year. I can promise you. They're already doing it. Just want to show the people what we are doing, and that'll come first. It's always about development first, but a really important part is that social side of it. We want to keep those ex-players involved, and there's a lot of them doing a lot. They drive out there at their own cost. It's a non-profit. So we can't pay them. We can't pay a Skalk Brits to come and do a talk, but we need a guy come do a talk, a Jean, a Marius Hubert, David Barry, all the players to come and do a talk because we need to raise funds. That's the only way to we're able to help, because there's a lot of ex-players with nothing, 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 nothing. So we really try and assist. You can't help them only for a week. It needs to be sustainable. Just to get them on the feet again, but also helping the youngsters and seeing where there's need, and as I said, the community upliftment. When you see there's a flood or people don't have blankets, we need that funding, to so we need those the one element to raise funds for the other elements, so you're going to need some of those events. It'll raise funds, the Sani to see, so the sponsors, we can't live without them, your Celsius, your DSV. Got Southern Sun, got some great guys, and we will try and get some more because we want to raise a profile, and we work closely with SA Rugby. Yeah, it's all about the profile, but for us, we just want to develop and contribute where we can.
I think we've got a bit out of you. I think we should let you do the job first before we get you back, and we'll pepper you some more with questions. Marius, just if there are companies out there who want to support SA Rugby Legends, if there are people that want to get involved with the work that you guys are doing, do they just go to the SA Rugby Legends website? Would they be able to get hold of you guys there, or is there another way?
No, you take your phone or your laptop now and you email me at marius@sarugbylegends.com. You're welcome to go to the website as well, or to get hold of John Smith. Yeah, and thanks for that. You know, if they can mail me again, marius@sarugbylegends.com. Myself and John, we'll come and see them. As I said, it's a non-profit. We need support, you know, and there's always opportunity to come as associate sponsors on the clothing. We're playing in a lot of events, and there's a lot more coming. I can't mention it now, but there's some exciting projects coming up.
Don't keep it a secret. Let us know.
When it's signed off, I'll let you guys know first. I promise it's going to be exciting. So there'll be great brand opportunities, and you know, let's mention one of the guys, like DSV. We do the Sonic, you see of them every year. There's great marketing value for them in this as well. But we don't just want the guy, hey, here you go, here's a $10 or whatever sponsor. We want to engage. We want to make them part of the whole family, you know. So most of the time we get a sponsorship, you never see the people. We'd like to engage with them and just make them feel part of the Legends family.
I can just say good luck, Marius. You've got your work cut out for you. You're still going to be involved a little bit in the sevens as well. So, and
are
there's
you
a
doubting
bit of,
me? Are you doubting me?
I'm not doubting you. I'm putting you on notice, as we did with Philip Snyman. We told him when he came back from the Olympics, before the Olympics, he was going to get onto the show when he came back with the medal. So we prophesized, and then he came with that. So we now said to him, when he becomes BOC Sevens coach officially, he'll come back. So he's going to come back now again. So we're doing the same with you, and we want to hear about what you guys are doing, and especially, I mean, listen, there's always place for a couple of legends on our podcast as well, and with some of their stories, because I think that's the one thing that also gets underplayed quite a bit, is just those stories that those rugby players have from the past, and we want to do more of that as we go on with this podcast.
Lots of great stories. I can confirm as well, I will be involved with Philip, so I'm taking up this role, but SA Rugby asked me to stay on as a consultant, so for the next 4 years I'll still consult with him, because he's on his own, he doesn't have an assistant coach, and we have to make sure that that we don't just chuck him into the deep end. He's such a great coach, such a great man, you know, so he needs all the assistance he can get. So I'll be around to try and assist him. I think he'll do well. The system is in good hands with him. So, all the best to all our teams. I think our under-20s as well will do well next year. We've got great players coming through. If we can keep all the talent and there's good coaches in the right positions, SA Rugby is in a favourable position for the next couple of years.
Marius, thanks for taking the time and agreeing to do this interview even before you've properly hit the deck running in your new job. So thanks for that and everything of the best. I think you guys are doing some wonderful work, and it'll go from strength to strength.
Thanks, Liam. Thanks, Brendan. Yeah. Thanks for having me on your show. And I'm sure I'll join you guys again. And all the best. Yeah, enjoy the rugby this weekend. You can get out of your little B&B there tomorrow.
I wasn't going to mention the B&B.
Yeah, the Airbnb, it's quite cute, I must admit. Nelspruit's a lovely place to be, but usually we yeah for things other than rugby. But I was going to say, Marius, after doing this, your meeting with the guys from SA Rugby Legends is going to be a breeze, so don't worry. But thanks for joining us, man.
Cheers, guys. Thanks a lot.
Cheers, Marius.
Thanks for listening. For the latest insights and rugby analysis each week, plus new episode alerts, please follow or subscribe to the series. Or find all episodes at jacarandafm.com or the Jackpot app.
That is world class!